Hello, 4B2, 4 billion and 2. This podcast is about 4 billion men and two little girls at the moment, but two women later on. This is really a podcast, a hobby, a project I want to do to try to focus on positive messaging, positive inspiration, outlook for men. And that's why 4 billion, because there's quite a lot of them in the world. And just to make it not exclusively men, it's also for my two little girls to have some guidance and hopefully some ideas as they grow up. It is a safe space for all. Everybody is welcome, and I encourage anyone to share this and share the messaging here, because my idea is to try and help men, which involves everybody trying to do that. So men who need help from everybody. So regardless of gender, sex, background, anything. So this is all about positivity, and I hope that everyone moving forward understands that, because it is a sensitive topic and I recognize that. My first guest today is the first guest of my other podcast, Wind Building, and I'm so happy again to have him on, John Peck. So John, if you can take a moment just to introduce yourself, in case people didn't listen to my previous podcast, my first episode, just take a moment to introduce yourself, who you are, what's your background, and how do you get to where you are today?
Yes. Okay, Nick. It's great to join you on this very courageous project, I think. We were both talking briefly before we came online, and it is a very, very sensitive area, and I suppose most people would back away from it because we could very easily say something that could be, felt to be very inappropriate, and in our naivety as men, we could say something with good intent, and it might be seen as kind of being kind of really unpleasant, or not unpleasant, but naive perhaps, really. So I'm coming into this with the trust that anybody who listens to this is going to pick up my thoughts as they appear in my head right now, but I wouldn't really want to kind of have to defend them too much, really, I guess. A bit like a dialogue, really. The other thing is I can talk as being a male. I can't talk about, I know nothing about transgender, really. I can't speak for them. I'm sure they'd have a different conversation. I can't speak for women. I have a bit of an understanding of what happens. And my life also has been, I suppose, predominantly male-dominated, in as much as, I went to a male boarding school and was there for, goodness knows, 10 years or something. And I then became a male army officer in an all-male domain at that time for a few years, and then became a police officer in the London, within the Metropolitan Police, which is undertaking some terrible, terrible reviews at the moment. And ended up very senior, and again in that all male domain, really. And yet, I kind of view some of the successes I had in those years as having quite a kind of developed sensitivity, which I'll perhaps talk about later, which allowed me to do a lot of things that I wasn't able to otherwise do. And also that has trickled into my family, I think, as well, and my role as a father. But again, perhaps we can talk about that later. So I'm kind of, I suppose, and now I'm a management consultant now, working with teams, taking senior teams away, doing kind of meaningful work with them, helping them turn their business around, which is very mixed gender, and my team is mixed gender. So that's the work that really excites me. When I'm not doing that, I'm doing adventures, rowing across the Atlantic Ocean and doing a bunch of other crazy stuff, adventures of one sort or another. And curiously enough, I'm just coaching four women who are rowing across the Atlantic in 18 months' time, which is a wonderful project for me to do. So I'm kind of hugely, I'm excited by your project, and I'm excited by your courage, Nick, in taking this on. And I just hope that people who watch it will do so with the sensitivity that I know you have. So, well done.
Yeah, I totally appreciate that. And we'll see. I guess I'm sure there's going to be someone who's not happy. But if the majority understand the positive intent and the definitely sensitive intent that we have, then hopefully it'll help someone. And if it helps one person, this is what I've said before, if it helps at least one person and doesn't hurt others, then it's been a success. So I totally recognize that you have a very sensitive outlook and approach, and I know that your intent is fully positive. But let's jump straight in. So what I wanted to really ask first and foremost is like challenges. What are the challenges, given that you've worked in this very male environment? In fact, and you've mentioned, but you're also a father of three boys. So you've also got that element of your life as very male heavy as well. So I was interested to know from your perspective, what are some of the challenges you've seen and you've maybe faced yourself, but you've seen in your work facing mainly men? Like, you know, things that are kind of male exclusive or predominantly men related.
Sure. Okay, so if I look at it in a work environment, and I think back particularly to those days in the police and also in the army, when men are together, they fuel each other up with a lot of energy and a lot of get up and go, as indeed women would as well, and they seem to sort of draw energy of maleness from each other, which allow them to go on and take risks and do stuff that's really quite difficult. I understand that really well. I spend a lot of time in male company, and I understand that. The danger for them, of course, is that they go over the top and they become kind of their thoughts become kind of ridiculous and very negative. So my job, I guess, as a senior police leader, particularly at that late stage, when running a police station, which was in the time of the Troubles in London, was to actually not to bring that maleness, but to bring a kind of a much more of a tenderness to the role, which enabled me to be able to have conversations with people in the community in a much more effective way than the much more traditional male way, let's say. Mm. And that enabled me to open lots of doors, which otherwise I don't think would have been open. So I think at work, it is really critical for men. They're able to open both sides of themselves. Mm. And a lot of the stuff we're reading now is very much about, as senior leaders, being able to open up ourselves to people and show that kind of inner weakness, if you like, sensitivity. So I think that's quite interesting. So that kind of was very much my role. And when I'm working with groups and teams, that's what we try and do, basically, is to get those kind of much more tender conversations going on, apart from obviously bringing the business to move forward. But it's actually getting people to work very closely with each other in that way. And people sometimes say, you're sometimes more like a woman than a man in the way you operate, which is interesting. Then, of course, so we talk about the challenges faced by men. So we talk about work. And then, of course, in a family, what is your role as a father and how do you do that? And I think for men, that's quite difficult now, to be tender and actually then to be strong, as a father, which sometimes gets neglected and leaves children being uncontained, I think. And then so in families and in relationships, and perhaps we'll talk about that a bit later, but, how can we manage our maleness in a relationship in a way that allows us to be kind of potent enough to do what we have to do and yet not be impotent? And I think that's interesting. And finally, in life, I mean, who am I? Kind of, what am I here for? And how can we manage when every night we watch television and we see appalling examples of senior men in organisations behaving so badly, towards women, and what do we deal with the collective guilt that we carry from watching that, from our embarrassment as a man, and particularly for me as a senior police officer in London. I mean, how am I feeling right now, about the terrible things that we see presented in front of us? And that really is, I think that's really quite difficult for us as a person, and particularly as a man, in respect to this particular aspect. And then finally, the pressures, how can I conduct myself in life within a prescribed pattern of correctness. I'm not talking about political correctness. I mean, generally, the need for us to be correct in the way we present ourselves without falling over, tripping up. So I do think that's really, I think that puts a lot of pressure on it, and it should do as well. And anyone watching this would say, well, quite right too. You know, it should happen. But the reality is, I'm not sure that women have that same pressure. They have other pressures, of course, far more important pressures, but I'm not sure they have that same pressures around correctness that men are having to deal with now.
Interesting. I gave John, just to give everyone who's listening a heads up, I gave John these questions, like a couple of guideline questions, about 20 minutes before the call, and he's already knocked them out of the park, I'd say. Like, you clearly just had a little think, and that's a beautiful set of answers. I think one thing that's interesting within your answers, you talked about tenderness, and I'd love to go back to that, like, more, dig a little more what tenderness means. But one thing I would say about all of those answers, sort of stereotypes, and what the stereotypes were in the policing, and what it was meant, how you were meant to be in the army or the police, and how, you know, what it means to be a police officer as well as just a man, like, or whatever. The stereotypes that we have in our cultures, especially in the West, let's frame it from our point of view, like, of what it is to be a man, that's, I think, shifted as well. And I think that shift, alongside this sort of pressure of how to conduct oneself, we're now having to relearn some of the things as a society that we've been brought up to see differently, maybe, or see in a different way. And I agree with you. It's right. It's right that we should change and adapt. But it is a challenge, because it's especially facing men. What do you think to those stereotypes and the previous ones as well?
Well, I think it's... I think a lot of it's around trying to understand what's going on. And I was running a very busy police station in London. I moved to another police station which wasn't as busy, but it gave me the opportunity, in running this place, gave me the opportunity to work, to do a course at a place called the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations. And so I would sit, you know, every Tuesday evening, you know, with a bunch of people who were from a very different environment. I mean, mainly female, mainly from social services and things. And I learned a lot. And during that, I invited someone to come and do some work with one of our shifts of police officers. And they were able to get really deep conversations happening around the tenderness and the sensitivity and the difficulty of their work. And it taught me, I went on to do a master's degree studying the whole piece around, you know, organisational behaviour. I think I was going to write my document as, you know, dysfunctional behaviour in the Metropolitan Police or something, until my supervisor said, "Well, don't do that. That won't be a very wise idea." But
in hindsight, it would have been perfect.
This was a long time, 25 years ago. It was 25 years ago. I remember him saying to me, that my supervisor saying to me when I bowled into his office one day, when my supervisor of this master's degree I was doing part-time, and he said to me one day, "John, you know, you guys are doing a fantastic job in the police in London." I was like, "Oh, thank you very much. That's very unusual for you to say something like that." And he said, "Yeah, you are, because you're like a repository for us all, non-police officers, to put our unwanted thoughts and feelings into you, to displace them from ourselves, so we don't have to confront them and put them into you." And I think there is something of that going on right now. There seems to be a sense to me that the police in London, having done some really bad things, and of course should be properly punished for them, and the terrible things that we've heard of, which almost unthinkable. But I wonder what it's like for those really good people, those really good men and women who are having to constantly take the flak now in the street and have no trust in them at all. You know, people I know would say they wouldn't, women said they wouldn't go to the police officer if they were in trouble, you know, and I just think, what a dreadful thing. And I think it's a bit of that is happening around this gender thing, where women quite rightly are having to kind of step up and, you know, make a point of the unfairness and the bad behaviour of men. But there seems to me there's no way for men to respond to that, really. I can't see it apart from changing their behaviour, which is obviously what this is all about, you know, which is incredibly important. But how can men respond to that? And what sense can they make of their life? Yeah. If they're decent people, which most people are, you know. One of the things I did learn was some stuff from Carl Jung around he talks about the animus and the anima within us, okay? And it sounds complicated, it's not that complicated, but basically it's the kind of the maleness and the femaleness, it's nothing to do with gender or sex or whatever, that lies within all of us. And the suggestion is, Carl Jung, that women will carry, you know, apart from their own kind of femaleness, but will carry the animus within them. The alternative shadow side of them will be animus, and the shadow side of men will be the anima, if I've understood it correctly. And you will remember, Nick, because we're a family, I had a very angry mother. And when we were young, we were all, you were probably scared as well, but I was her son, you know, really kind of scared of her animus, if you like, which made it very difficult for me as I grew up through life as a man, because I decided that women were very angry, women were something to avoid at all costs, you know. it was not a pleasant thing to have to experience. And it took me a very good therapist and, you know, and quite a bit of money to actually get the hell out of that space and to face up to the fact that everybody can be angry or, you know, whatever. So I do think it's quite difficult for men in trying to kind of, you know, handle their relationship with an angry partner. I'm only talking about male-female here. Let's not get complicated with other gender. That would be another discussion which we, you know, certainly could have, but I'm not qualified to talk. So how can men, and my wife and I, as part of our therapy, was to understand from very good therapists that it's quite okay to be angry. And I'd learned, and she'd learned through her parents, that being angry is not a safe place to be. So we had to be taught how to be angry.
No.
And that, for a man, was quite hard.
It's a very interesting point. And again, I feel I'm even nervous. I'm nervous in this conversation. I'll be open about it. I'm trying hard to make sure we, you know, I help you to guide your thoughts as much as I can, like, so that we remain in this safe space of not upsetting people. But it's obviously it's we're starting to talk about men, women, and differences in those ways, and I think it's right that we have to do that, because in a way, you know, men's experience and men's challenges are coming from whatever this is, whatever those differences are, like whether it's the testosterone that's coursing through us in a higher volume, or whether it's the differences in animus, anima, like you're saying. And I think I'm kind of wanting to verbalize that I'm nervous about it, because I really don't want to also feel like we're saying sweeping generalizations about, you know, men, and sweeping generalizations about women, and that's that, and we've got some answer. I think your point here is, you said, how are we supposed to respond to these things, you know? And I think that is one of the most fundamental challenges. We as individuals are not very good, and I'm talking about everybody now as a species, like we're not very good at understanding ourselves, of reflecting and understanding our sort of core behaviors and our core responses to things, you know, our natural anger, our natural outrage, and these emotions, they bubble up from nowhere. Like we can't, like, unless you get really conditioned, it's difficult to sort of spot, it's difficult to control. And I think, like you said, understanding other people and their behaviors is really, really important, but it's also very difficult. And I'd say as well, like this, I think that's one of the big challenges we're facing, like linked to what you're saying, is like we have all these examples of what we definitely don't want to be, right? We have them displayed to us a lot in media and in the way in which these like movements are coming in, which are, again, rightly so. You know, we should be aware of these negative things. We should be conscious of them and fighting to, you know, get rid of them. But the problem is that we don't have a lot of positive framing of how we are differently. You know, we don't, the framing of like these traits that you've just sort of briefly described and things, there's not a lot of positivity framed around those things. Like, where are they useful in modern day? Where is a sort of a traditional stereotypical man trait useful in nowadays? Sure, okay, we might be physiologically stronger on average, so we maybe can pick up some block or something like more easily, but that, in reality, that's not modern day, that's not going to give us enough to be really useful in society in a constructive way. So I just wanted to kind of like, I wanted to give you another nod to the safe space, but also sort of the angry woman thing. I think you're right. I think there is something there, but it's also this like the anger between people and the way in which we feel sometimes we're being taught or told we're supposed to like dampen these things down. We're supposed to, you know, don't shout at the kids. Don't show anger. You know, you mustn't show any anger and you mustn't frighten people. So, well, that makes sense, you know, logically it makes sense. Don't frighten kids. That makes sense. You shouldn't frighten kids. But sometimes, you know, kids are really annoying and you know, your blood's boiling and you're shouting. And then, you know, and then what? Yeah. What does that mean? And how are you then as a human? Like, what does that mean about you? Yes. I don't know. Yes. I'm going to sort of throw that ball at you.
No, I think it's really good. I think for a couple, and you know, you and I both have a female partner, but you know, wives, but I think for a couple the work is in trying to deal with these dynamics, so my work was in trying to deal with my kind of patheticness in not being able to handle anger. I was able to handle it with men, but for some reason I wasn't able to handle it with women. Now, that was, do you see what I mean? That's not the woman's fault. It's my fault. And I'm sure that women would equally have difficulty if they'd had an experience with a very angry father or whatever, you know, that would have difficulty. But so for all of us, I think it's about working on relationships in a way that allow these things to, for us to be as good as we possibly can with each other, and to not be dragged into those things that our amygdala is kind of going, watch out, yeah. Something terrible is going to happen here. and to be able to be a bit more emotionally mature, you know. And you know, it doesn't matter whether you're a man or woman, being able to exercise the animus and the anima. And I think that's where I kind of pull away from Jung, because I don't think it's necessary that the elements belong to men. The animus and the anima should be in the man, and the anima, you know, both should be. You should be able to exercise both of them. And you know, otherwise the difficulty is you end up running away, you know, and men will run away. They'll run away and find reasons not to be around, you know.
Okay.
And that's not
helpful. No, I agree. So let's switch it to a little positivity now. let's try and look at some of the positive stuff. So I wanted to revisit that tenderness comment, because I think that was really interesting, and I want you to dig a little deeper on what that means to you, because you said about tender conversations, tenderness, bringing tenderness to the role, and you also said something about you being more of a woman, in, I can't remember exactly, a woman more than a man in that style. I'm wondering, like, if you can talk around that, but also, where does that come from in you? Is that confidence in yourself, or what?
That's a great question. Where does it come from? Because, you know, theoretically, with my whole male-dominated background, that would be unnatural. I think I was lucky to marry a very emotionally intelligent woman who's helped me enormously in my development, And then also I got kind of very interested in the topic. And I'm an extremely good therapist who helped me get through it. But the interesting thing is, let me give an example of how it can manifest itself, okay? And I can be brief on this, but to cut a long story short, about, God, I don't know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever it was, I had the privilege of working with some inner city leaders who were working on the front line in charities, working on the front line, youth leaders with the people, you know, predominantly from inner city gangs. And they were wonderful people. They taught me so much. But I remember coming to the end of a session, one of the men, who was maybe in his very early 20s, came up to me and said to me, well, I sort of preempted by saying, my middle son, both my young sons used to work with me in this work. And the middle one used to work very closely with me, with groups. So often he'd be going up a mountain, and I'd be going up a mountain, and we'd see each other and wait up and down through the mist. And as we approached each other, he'd go, oh, Dad, and he'd come over and give me a big cuddle, you know. And one of the guys who'd been on the course, and the inner city guys, came up to me and said, you know, you've taught me so much. I was going, oh, that's very nice. And he said, no. He said, you've taught me a lot about being a father. And I was going, how? Because I haven't talked about being a father. And I've just watched you with your son. I've watched you cuddle him, and I've watched the affection from you that you have for each other. He said, that hasn't entered my life. He said, I've got a child, but a son, but it would never have crossed my mind. You know, I don't see this boy very much, but it wouldn't have crossed my mind when I do see him to give him a cuddle like that as a father. So that stuff does spread, you know, and on courses, my team are always cuddling each other, you know, in a loving way, a very appropriate way, you know, when we say, how you doing, mate? You know, and it's quite fun. I think the clients quite enjoy it, you know, because we can kind of encourage that warmth and openness. And so I think we can demonstrate it. And with my children, even in their angry teenage years when they were growing up, not angry, but, you know, they're crazy teenage years. Whenever we drop them off in the car, they'd always give us a kiss before they went. Men, boys, you know, in their teens, with all their mates around them. And I think that's what we can do.
I think
we can demonstrate better behaviours than we would have learned when we were younger. You know, we can, when our father, my father, I remember giving him a cuddle and he looked absolutely horrified, as if I was going to, you know, I don't know what he thought was going to happen. He sort of shrunk back and thought, bloody hell. Because he sent me to boarding school to toughen me up. That was his thing, because I got two elder sisters. And he said, you know, you need to toughen up. And I've sent me off to boarding school for 10 years, you know. And so that's the way it was.
It's a good point, because it's physical affection is something we all crave, human beings crave. It's something that we, I think, have built in. And men don't spend a lot of time, you know, they spend a lot of time, what's the polite way of saying this, feeling like they want to have sex, let's say. I'm trying to think of the most appropriate way of saying this. I think we have a lot more of that generally than women, I've at least from what I understand. My lived experience, certainly that seems to be the case. But it's that physical, it's the intimacy, which is also, it's not just about, you know, the sex, it's about the intimacy I think we crave. And I think one of the challenges that men generally face as well is there's been a lot of historical prejudice against, a lot of homophobia, right? And certainly when I grew up, like when I was younger, it was kind of normal to be like quite homophobic. I mean, not necessarily really hating people or going out of your way to like hurt people or anything, but just negative behavior. You know, I'm ashamed of it now, but I'm cognizant that it was of our time. You know, I'm sure there was gay guys around me at my all boys school, and they were like, would have kept themselves completely quiet because it would have been awful for them to come out at that time, you know. And I'm very happy, very happy that that's changed nowadays. And, you know, I think a lot, I mean, there's still homophobia, but there's a lot more young kids who are much more like take everything as it comes, you know, whatever, like it doesn't matter that you're what your sexual preference is and things. But I think with that stuff, because of that negative historical sort of legacy of homophobia and what men can do to one another that is, you know, appropriate or allowed in society. I mean, I'm thinking of like the way you watch people hugging each other now, you know, so there's a lot of like this hand slapping, big slap on the back type of thing. But even that's like, it shows affection. Yeah. It shows the closeness. And I also am a big hugger, you know, I hug people hopefully appropriately all the time, but it's, but I think men do need that as well. And I think that's something which I do jujitsu now, which is like, you know, I always joke with my wife, it's like basically going to a gym and hugging a man for an hour and a half, or usually a man, like lying about hugging each other, trying to not to break each other's arms. But it is interesting how that gives me something that I kind of need, like a closeness, a connection, you know. It's like it's nothing sexual at all. It's a closeness of someone, a connection. Yes. I'm just interested about that. Like, I feel like that's something, maybe the tenderness gets shown as well through those type of things, and we lack that. Whereas girls generally much more affectionate in that way. They'll touch one another. There's no legacy. Yes, in that way.
And I think it's also slightly complicated, and I don't want to sort of overcomplicate, but you know, I found it easier sometimes cuddle men, because I sometimes worry if I cuddle a woman, you know, is this felt to be inappropriate, you know, am I kind of cuddling right away, or you know, so it starts cuddling a distance, and, you know, because you don't want to be pervert or something, you know. But there we are. It's but I, you know, if you look at the research,
absolutely.
You know, if you look at the research,
no, you go. Sorry, Uncle John. You said look at the research. Start look at the research again. Okay.
I mean, if you look at the research around kind of monkeys, you know, and or chimpanzees, if they put them in a setting where they haven't been cuddled, you know, by their mother, and they put a post wrapped round with a cloth, and you know, they'll go and cuddle the post. I mean, it's you know, so. You know, I think it's great. I think it's really good. I think that's something as men that we can show a lead on, you know, and that does help enormously. And also being able to express our tenderness and insecurity is very, and if I think of my three boys, they're really, really good friends of mine. And I don't think there's very little they don't know about me, you know, that I haven't shared with them. If I was them, we talk a lot in feelings as well, and they're three strong men, you know, but they kind of and the conversations they will have with their friends will be like that, deeper and more interesting.
I feel like you've given them, you and your dad as well, I think we talked about that in the previous podcast, your dad is a very, very inspirational man. And I think, you know, probably that's, and your mum as well, you know, she was, yes, maybe she was angry. To be honest, I remember Auntie Yvonne as having very bad hearing, because I think I was so young when she was older, you know, so she had very bad hearing and used to sort of talk very loudly because of it. So as I remember her being very loud, not necessarily angry, so your dad and her together, probably really good role models, I would say. And that's something else, I think, role modeling behavior, that's something I'm going to look into more and more in this, hopefully, in this sort of sequence of talking about men. And because I see some of the role models now that a lot of men are flocking to, the Andrew Tates of the world, and I think we briefly talked about him, and you know, Jordan Peterson's and things, there's like a lot of it's quite one directional in sort of telling men what they should be and how they should be that, and it focuses a lot on material wealth and elements of personality, which, to be honest, I don't think are going to help men overall. I mean, and just for the record, you know, I think some of what Andrew Tate says makes a lot of sense. He's quite a smart guy in the way he's constructed his business and things. I personally don't buy into a lot of the more kind of like materialistic stuff, and he does have some very misogynistic views, so I don't like the guy very much. But I give him credit for, like, you know, he's constructed something which has obviously created him a lot of success in money and things. And same with Jordan Peterson. I really like Jordan Peterson's book. I read that. I was like, that makes sense to me. It's a good guideline, you know. And again, but he's kind of speaking about other things, but people who've jumped onto their kind of bandwagon and listening to them and being completely absorbed by their messaging, I worry a little bit that we lose other role modeling behavior and people like yourself who, you know, people should be listening to and inspired by. I'll plug your book at this point. So you've got two books, actually. So you've got Restless and The Seven Seas of Success, The Adventurer. It's seven, right? Or nine? Oh, I've got it. I'm getting it wrong now. Seven Seas of Success. How to Add Adventure in Your Life. So John's written two books, both of which are excellent. The first one is all about his adventurous life. And the second one's basically like how to be a crazy adventurer on steroids, basically. Without steroids, but an adventurous life. Survive, yeah. So, sorry, I lost myself because I then started plugging your book. But I was talking about those role models and role modeling behavior. I was wondering if you like how do you feel about that with regards to, you know, your dad and you and the role modeling behavior that you've experienced, what you described on that with the leader teams.
Okay, I come at it from if I think a bit from a leadership perspective. I modelled myself on some really good leaders I've come across over my life. And there was one in particular when I was a young army officer. I was waiting for training to become a young army officer, and I was a soldier for 9 months living in a barrack room with a bunch of crazy dudes, you know, men. And we were off the rail, most of them, off the scout. And we had a young army, we had various different army officers who used to come through and look after us for a few weeks or something. And I saw the ones who were just natural leaders and the ones who weren't, you know, and the ones who were had a real warmth to them. And the men could get that straight away. They'd engage with them and they'd really follow them over the end of the cliff, you know. And so if I think of my role with them as I took them off into the jungles of British Honduras, as it was then, for weeks at a time, on Belize, as it's now called, you know, on my own with a bunch of soldiers and a sergeant and a couple of corporals. And my role was to get really close to them and to be a bit of a father figure for them. Very often I'd write their letters for them, and they were, you know, some quite tender moments. And if ever they were in trouble or worried about something, my role was to be there as a sort of as a support and mentor for them. Then everything was fine, you know. Their life was good, you know. We go through the tough times together, and they would support me in my role. You know? So I think as leaders, there's some great stuff being written now around how critically important it is for leaders, whatever gender, to openly share their feelings appropriately. And their concerns and their anxieties and their frailty and so on. And if people can do that, it instantly works. And if I'm working with teams, as we do very often up in remote cottages up in the Lake District, where there's disharmony in the team, we will deliberately within the first hour encourage people to share some thoughts that are quite sensitive and tender with each other. And then we'll work with personality profiles, which are well known, things like Myers-Briggs and there are many, many other different versions of that, where they can talk about the issue of, you know, what Jung talked about as thinking and feeling. And this is basically what we're talking about here, the animus and the anima, in different words. And when people then understand that we have a natural kind of tendency to operate from a more feeling perspective, I think, then they can start to open up with each other and understand and respect each other as individuals. So there's a lot that we can do, but we have to be listening and kind of really caring about those relationships. And once people start doing that, if you get a whole team doing that, we can take them to the end of the world and they'll be fantastic. The other thing I would say is that we occasionally we get an all male group, you know, a subgroup, because we're working in subgroups of six, and they're never quite the same as a mixed group. Mm-hmm. When we get a kind of male female group, there's a very different vibe. Mm. Much more sensitive, I think, very often. There'll be very typically, we can't make this assumption, but often, let's just say often, there'll be a lot more sensitive discussion taking place.
And I wonder if it's a case of, you know, also sometimes in a mixed group, for example, with women, modeling that behavior, allowing to be the first one to open up, allowing to be the sort of, there's a safer space in that way that I feel like, you know, men, and I often wonder if it's like, there's an issue with the fact that because men and women are different in certain ways, I think one of the challenges is that often we don't understand one another. And there's always been that joke of like, you know, men don't understand women and whatever, you know, like all this kind of like stereotypical, like laughing about how we don't understand women. But I actually feel like nowadays, really, women don't understand men a lot of the time. And it's you know, on the other side as well. And I feel like that's actually, we're not as simple as people make us out to be. You know, it's like there's a lot of stereotypes about how simple men are and things. And it's like, I feel like there's a lot of ways in which we don't even recognize ourselves sometimes of what we need and how we need that tenderness, that emotional, like understanding that we're coming from an emotional perspective, and we work better with that feelings, as you said. So, yeah, I do wonder about that and how we can try and push that a bit maybe in the future is like, let's try to help men be more tender and more open. But like to get there, it's that the culture also needs to shift between men, between how they interact in groups and things. And it's also not exactly the same as women, even still, you know, it's still not going to be the same level of emotion necessarily, or the same way in which the emotions are framed and the feelings are framed.
No, I mean, I and I'm thinking as you're speaking, I'm thinking, what would the headlines be, you know, if you ventured a program on television or a headline in paper about, you know, women don't understand men, I think there'd be a howl of derision from people, from men and from women. And that's the difficulty. From the men who'd be going, oh, for God's sake, what do we all always touch and feel talk? And for many women who are going, no, you don't know the half of it. You know, you talk to me about, well, I understand them very well, only too well. Maybe they don't understand themselves, well, you know. So we shouldn't laugh about it, but I'm just saying how difficult it is. And hence, this is why I applaud you for having these conversations, because, you know, they are difficult conversations to have. It's so sensitive. And that's a shame. I don't think it would be the same the other way around. I think if women were to share their thoughts, I think there would be far more respect and understanding and listening.
I'm inclined to agree with you. I mean, I talked to my wife, I mentioned this to you before, but I talked to my wife about doing this and having this, you know, concept of a podcast or something to just try and help men, you know, help men who need help and get some more sort of positive inspiration, maybe role models in front of men who need them. And she felt like, you know, well, men have had this for years, you know, men have got all of these support networks, all these things. And I thought, well, in some ways, yes, you know, historically men have been massively advantaged and privileged, and, you know, especially white men like us, you know, white older men like us, is like, you know, we've had a lot of privilege in a lot of different things. And as you mentioned before, we've had a lot of men within our peer groups that have been awful, like done awful things, continue to do awful things and abuse power and abuse their position and abuse their privilege. So for sure, like there's plenty of ways in which all of that's true, except that it's also true that we're having a separate lived experience. You know, when we haven't actually got those of us who aspire to be something better, something not representing those awful people and something that is positively contributing towards society as a whole, you know, there isn't a lot out there positive role modeling. And I think for women, there is a lot more now because of the good work that's been done and continues to be done and should be done in helping women to empower themselves and in empowering women to be leaders and you know, and take a strong female empowered approach. But I do agree. I think there's a lot, I don't know if I agree, because I'm not sure it's 100% what you said, and I don't want to put words in your mouth in this sensitive topic, but I feel like there is a lack of that for men at the moment. And hopefully this will help. Let's see, I guess. Okay, listen, John, I'm going to let you go because it's been wonderful to talk to you. But just before we go, let's promote your book again, because I really feel like we should promote that book, How to Adventure, the Seven Seas to Success. Pick it up in Amazon. It's great. It's an excellent read. And also Restless, you should read his first book, which is fantastic as well. And go check him out on the first podcast I ever did and tell me if it was a better interview this time, because I kind of listened back to that interview and I cringed my way through it, like talking. Oh. Should have let you talk.
no, that's right.
But thanks so much.
No worries, mate.
Lovely to talk to you too.
Okay, lovely to talk to you, Nick. And just keep up a good work. Well done for your courage. That's good, man. Thanks then. Bye now.
Okay, thanks for listening. For those still here, if you're still here, please do review it. It would be really useful to me. I haven't really pushed too hard with these podcasts. It's been a personal project so far, but I figure why not ask? If you've got a chance to review or rate on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you're using, that would be super useful. Thank you so much, and I'll see you in the next episode.